So I want us to think a little bit about being quiet, about waiting on the Lord, about being still, and just to think for a moment about how you feel about that. We're not going to share this, so you can be really honest. So the idea of being still before God, I'm not thinking about being on your own particularly, or even spending hours in silence. I'm just thinking about the whole stilling of yourself. How noisy are you inside? Some of you chuckling, thinking, if you knew. You know, if you go into any school nowadays, there is a much bigger than ever focus on mental health. And rightly so, with good reason, perhaps especially since the pandemic. People trying to help youngsters and old folk like us too to process and to reflect on their lives and to deal with the stress that they face. And many people look for things like mindfulness as a way of doing that. And you would have heard mindfulness, you'd have perhaps seen the colouring books that folk use to help them just to be present. Sometimes Christians get a little bit overexcited about it being maybe a Buddhist practice and therefore we shouldn't touch it. But actually, Christian tradition of reflection and meditation and being still is like ancient. And they're both tapping into the same concept, the same idea, that we are to try and recapture living in this moment. Now, I know I struggle with living in the future as an individual, but this is not about me. Some of you struggle with living in the past. Some of us live in the present, but very few of us do. And partly the modern world is geared towards keeping us thinking about the next thing. So if I were to say, let's spend 10 minutes now being still, some of you perhaps will automatically start thinking about what you did this week. I wouldn't do that. I have a diary because I need to remember what I did last week, because my memory for yesterday is awful. But my thinking always leaps into tomorrow or what I'm going to be doing later today. And I have to really work hard. And practices like mindfulness or meditation or reflection on scriptures we'll look at in a moment help me bring me back into the centre. So again, think for a second. If I would ask you to be quiet, where would your mind jump? Would it jump back? Would it jump forward? Or are you just in the moment? Think about where you are. I'm convinced that modern life is geared to keeping us feeling overwhelmed. And many of us are just one tiny incident away from having a meltdown. And even our vocabulary about how we cope with stress has changed in recent years. And so the ways we deal with stress is different. I was speaking to a neighbour yesterday about, I'm remembering what I did yesterday about something. And I just sort of just said about, don't just live in today, because this was on my mind, just live in today. And he said, oh, how very zen of you, he said sarcastically. And I thought, maybe you need to, you know, think about that a little bit, because automatically we think, whatever. But actually, we only have this moment. We only ever have this moment. And yet, often we occupy our lives in other parts, maybe thinking you should be somewhere else. Do you ever have that feeling? That you should be somewhere else than where you are right now, or you should be doing something else. Sit down and watch the telly. Oh, I should be doing the ironing, or I should be doing the washing up, or go out for a walk. Oh, I shouldn't be enjoying this. Some people don't have a chance to go out for a walk. I should be doing this and doing that and visiting people. It's like paralysis, isn't it, if we're not careful? Having to be someone else because of the noise in our lives saying, oh, I'm not good enough. If I could be like that person, they have the perfect marriage. If I could be like that, then that would be okay. Always thinking about something other than this moment. And I think Psalms, like Psalm 62, call us back. I wait quietly before God, for my victory comes from him. And there'll be a chance tomorrow and Tuesday in the growth groups to think a bit about what that means for our lives. What does it mean for us to wait quietly? This is one of my favourite stories, and you've heard it more than once. I'm going to read it word for word because I like it. It's about a fisherman. One day, a fisherman was lying on a beach, by his fishing rod, by his boat, enjoying the sunset. About that time, a businessman came along, walking down the beach, trying to relieve some of the stress of his work day, and he noticed the fisherman sitting on the beach and decided to find out why the fisherman was sitting instead of working. "You aren't going to catch many fish that way," he said. "But I've caught all the fish I need for today," said the fisherman. The businessman said, "You should be working harder rather than laying on the beach, though." The fisherman said, "Well, what would my reward be?" "Well, you could get bigger nets and catch more fish," was the businessman's answer. "And then what would my reward be?" said the fisherman, smiling. "Well, you'd make more money. You'd be able to buy a bigger boat, and then you could have larger catches of fish." "And then what would my reward be?" smiled the fisherman. The businessman was getting a bit stressed at this point and saying, "Well, you could buy more boats and you could employ people to work for you and you could have a whole load of fish and you could have a whole load more money." The businessman got angry and said, "Don't you understand? You could build a fleet of boats, sail all over the world, have employees catch fish for you." And the fisherman said, "And what would my reward be?" The businessman was now red with rage and shouted, "Don't you understand? You will become so rich, you will never have to work again. You could spend the rest of your day sitting on this beach, enjoying the sunset." And the fisherman, of course, said, "Well, what do you think I'm doing right now?" Yeah, and that's a great parable for our day, isn't it? We should be doing more, being more, in order that we can rest more. We were told, weren't we, back in the 1960s by an American government department that the biggest problem of the new generation, that's our generation, is that we'd have so much leisure time we wouldn't know what to do with it all. Is that your experience? No. It's always about the next thing. So Psalms like this, "I wait quietly before God." It's on the screen. Verse 1 and verse 5. "I wait quietly before God, for my victory comes from him. He alone is my rock, my salvation, my fortress, where I'll never be shaken. Let all that I am wait quietly before you, for my hope is in him. He alone is my rock, my salvation, my fortress, where I would not be shaken." Waiting patiently for God. It has that sense of being fully present. And how many times in our lives are we not fully present? How many times have you driven somewhere and you thought, "I don't remember the last 10 miles of that road"? No? Yeah, we've all done that, haven't we? Or how many times are you listening to somebody and then you're thinking, "Okay, I've just tuned out for a second. I'm not sure whether the next response is a yes or a no." Lots of husbands nodding as well. Yes, no, yes, whatever the right answer is. Or how many times are you watching TV and you're doing other things? You're surfing on your tablet or playing Candy Crush or whatever it is you get up to, or you're knitting or doing Sudoku or whatever it is you do. You're trying to multitask. One of the things about diets I've been reading is how you mean to be looking at your food when you're eating it, because then it tells your body it's coming and it fills you up quicker. But how many of us are doing other things when we're eating our food? Because we're used to multitasking. We have to. I know some of my children, not present company, I know when they're going to phone me because they're driving home from work. And I'm sort of filling their gap because they don't realise that I'm just sitting at home waiting for their phone call. I said, "I've actually got other things to do, but I'm ready to talk to you, Dad. You should be happy about that." I said, "No, you're trying to fill the void of your journey home by me. I'm not going to do that." They phone Vicky and she's all over it apparently, but me, not me. We do it all the time, don't we? We try and fill our lives with lots of things that keep us busy. Vicky was away this week on her course, and I found myself with more time to myself than I would normally have. And scratching around, trying to fill the noise, fill the quiet with noise to keep myself busy. If you've lost a loved one, you might have had a similar experience of saying, "How do I keep myself out of mischief in order to keep the days going?" And the psalm calls us back, wait patiently before God. Because our victory comes from him. And that's true of our devotional lives too. However we understand those. We have noisy hearts. I've told you before of speaking to one of the monks up at Charterhouse, a Carthusian monastery, and asking him with Philip here, we were together, and I remember saying to him, how long did it take you to settle your heart down? And in my mind I was thinking, you know, when he comes to pray, and he's been there for many, many years, how long would it take for him just to be still and sense God's presence and shut the noise of his life out? And he thought for a moment, and then he said, about 10 years. I thought, 10 years of solitude. I was thinking, like, how many minutes did it take? Or what psalm can you recite to get yourself into the Zen zone, as my neighbour will call it? 10 years of being broken, he said. That's what it took to still the noise in his heart. So actually, we're in good company. If that's the truth for monks, it's how much more true it is for us as well. So how do we do that? Especially for those of us who don't like to be on our own, who fill their lives with quiet. How do we be still? Now, this may not be your favourite thing, but I know in some of the growth groups, you were saying, well, 2 weeks ago we looked at singing, and singing wasn't really my thing, but being quiet is. So I'm expecting tomorrow for you to be playing your jokers, or Tuesday, your growth groups. Those who say, oh, I don't like singing, I like to be quiet. Okay, so this week, you'll get a chance to teach us all about that. Now, there's a book I would recommend that's actually quite hard to get hold of, and I have one copy of it. I think it is... I say that and then I regret it. Probably my favourite book on spirituality. Okay, I might have to redact that, but that, today we'll allow that. It's called A Testament of Devotion by a guy called Thomas Kelly, who's an American Quaker mystic. And what I love about it is he's not weird. You know, you read some mystics and think, yeah, that's great, but, you know, I don't live that life. This guy talks very openly. I have one copy, and if anyone wants to borrow it, I have written my name in the front of it, and I know where you live. So I'm not. But you can download a PDF copy of it. It's not very well formatted, but it is free. And you can get them, but you have to get them secondhand. They're not in print anymore. But he has this sense of trying to live these two lives, of a higher life, as he calls it, of connecting with God life, and with a getting on with the rest of our lives life. A stillness that is not about sitting at home with a lighted candle and incense, but actually living our lives and maintaining a stillness within us, which I think is a really interesting concept, that as we don't walk into stillness, we live in stillness. And he has some really, it's not a long book, there's like 3 books in this, so you're welcome to borrow it. And what I love, some people hate it, but previous owners have written notes in the margins. I love that in a book. Some folk hate it, but I like it. But this is one of the things he says. He says centre like this. He's American, so let's allow that. Life is meant to be lived from a centre. Notice the capital C, centre, a divine centre. Life from the centre is a life of unhurried peace and power. Who'd like to live like that? A life of unhurried peace and power. Me too. It's simple. Really? It's serene. It is amazing. It is triumphant. It is radiant. It takes no time, but occupies all our time. We need not get frantic. He is at the helm. And when our little day is done, we lie down quietly in peace, for all is well. Now, for some of you, that you might be thinking, that is so far out of my reach. For others, maybe one or two, that is a description of your life. But for most of us, I'm guessing, he says, projecting my own noise onto you, that this is our aspiration, to live like this, to live from a place of quiet centre, rather than thrashing around and then trying to redeem the present moment. And Thomas Kelly has some really good tips about how to do that. You're welcome to borrow that afterwards. So how are we to do it? I want to just give you three just ideas about how you might begin to do this when we're quiet and waiting before God. And it's not rocket science. This is the first one. Focus on our breathing. Now, if you breathe heavily, everyone ends up focusing on your breathing. And if you snore, then you're particularly good at focusing on your breathing, because often it wakes you up when you're watching the TV, if you fall asleep of an evening. But breathing is a really, really good way of just paying attention to ourselves. And so even now, maybe, you've probably not been thinking about your breathing since you've gone in here, but you've been doing it because you're still alive. You just do it automatically. But when we start focusing on our breathing, things change. Other stuff gets shut out. And we start focusing on ourselves, not in a selfish way, but in a bringing ourselves back to the present. In the 14th century, St. Gregory says this, and I think it's really helpful, because this is a good understanding. This comes from the Christian tradition, not from the Buddhist tradition. It is not out of a place to, not out of place to teach people, especially beginners, that's us, that they should introduce their mind to themselves, I love that, through the control of breathing. This is why certain masters recommend them to control the movement inwards and outwards of their breath, and to hold it back a little. In this way, they will also be able to control the mind together with the breath. Okay, that's written in a sort of medieval language, but as we focus on our breathing, the ins and the outs of our breathing, it brings us back to ourselves. I love that phrase. It introduces our minds to ourselves, because often we do live in different parts, don't we? Our minds are elsewhere, we might say. This breathing could bring us back. And many scholars talk about the name of God that's used in the Hebrew scriptures. One of the names of God, perhaps the most used name of God that's never mentioned by the Jews. What's that? Okay, now breathe in and out noisily. Could it be that even in the act of breathing, there is a recognition that we are made in God's image, that he has put his stamp in our lives? Why, many scholars think this about the Hebrew scripture. This may be, without even knowing it, everyone who's breathing is actually calling on the name of the Lord. So why not focus on our breathing, waiting on God? Silence begins with quiet. It sounds obvious, but not as a quiet place where you can hear the salmon leaping. I love that sound. But the quiet inside of us, that's half our battle, isn't it? Dealing with our own noise. Breathing might be a good way to do that, to start that process. The second way, which is related to the breathing, is to just to choose one or two words, just to focus. There's lots been written by the Christian mystics over the years, more recently by Metropolitan Antony, the Orthodox Archbishop, talking about centering prayer, the kind of just choosing one or two words to focus on. There's a lovely text, The Cloud of Unknowing, another 14th century text, and it says this: his contemplatives seldom use words when they pray, but if they do, they choose only a few, and the fewer the better. I love that. Just don't worry about getting the words right. You're not trying to formulate a prayer that you can read in church. You're just trying to keep your body on track. You're trying to introduce your mind to the rest of yourself. And so you might choose words like Abba, or Father, God, Lord, Jesus, Spirit, Peace, Control, Wait. Whatever the word is, not really important. It just kind of brings us back. And maybe not to use the word until we know we've wandered. And then say, actually, just come back to this, come back to this. Maybe just by focusing on Yahweh as we breathe. That's a very well-worn path. One-syllable words to help us keep on track. The idea being you're not using your brain's power to try and formulate coherent sentences. That's not the purpose. You're trying just to be still before God. And then perhaps the last thing that I'd want to kind of encourage you with is this last point. Don't give up. Don't give up. Like any skill, any discipline, it's not easy. If it were easy, anyone could do it. You remember Brother Lawrence, the guy practicing the presence of God, the guy who ended up, the baker who ended up in the kitchens of the monastery and wasn't very happy about it. So that's very quickly his story. And ended up realizing that the presence of God is even in the pots and pans of life. That God can be found in every aspect, every activity of life. And he says this: be not disheartened at your many falls. Truly, this habit can only be formed with difficulty. Yet when it is formed, how great will be your joy therein. So three simple things. First one, focus on our breathing. And we're going to have a go at this. Second one, choose one or two words. Don't get clever. You're trying to keep yourself centered. And the third one, don't give up. It's not easy to still ourselves. It takes some people 10 years or more. And we're going to do it in a couple of minutes. And so what we're going to do from now on in, and I'm going to begin with the end in mind. I want to warn you where it's going to go, and then you can just not panic. We're going to listen to a song. There's a fairly new collective of songs by a group called the One Hope Project. If you're into new songs, we've sung a couple of them here without you realising it. This is another one. If I get to the sound desk before anyone else in the cafe, often I'll put this one on. And this song is about just resting in the presence of God. Be still, my soul. And then what I'd like us to do is we're going to have communion after a moment or two silence, in complete silence. And I want you just to practice some of these things. So focus on our breathing. Perhaps we just leave that slide up during communion, Mike. That would be helpful. Focus on our breathing. Choose one or two words. Don't give up. And where your mind goes, keep trying to bring it back to what's happening. The whole point of communion, of course, is it's physical. It's the elements in front of us. It has a story of the presence of God with us. And it's something perhaps we can focus on, even with our eyes open rather than with our eyes shut. Often when we close our eyes, it's for concentration. For me, I find that more difficult. I was up on the Downlands praying with some folk the other day. This is confession. And we did some praying. And I was amazed how many people in the prayer time had their eyes shut. It was the most glorious morning. If I close my eyes, I'm somewhere else. I've gone. So I often keep my eyes open because it helps me to focus, which seems to be the opposite of what I was told as a kid. But it works for me. And if something like bread and wine comes your way, you could just sit and hold it and look at it and use that to draw you into the presence of God. Or there might be something you've heard from Psalm 62, the wait patiently for the Lord. You could use those words to help you to focus. So we're going to spend the next sort of 10 minutes or so with communion in complete silence. And then I'll break the silence at the end with a prayer. Does that sound okay? If you fall asleep, that's perfectly okay. There's no window to fall out of. You're on a chair, you're safe. If you're serving communion, then I'll sort of stand up and look like I need some help and you'll know when to come. And I appreciate those serving communion won't be able to enter into this in the same way that others will. And if your eyes are shut and the communion bread and wine comes your way, then the loving person next to you will give you a little nudge. They won't make you feel embarrassed, all right? This is going to be okay. It's going to be survivable. Let's be still, and then we'll play the song just to settle us, and then we'll be quiet before the Lord.